News, if you remember correctly, not by the military. CBS ran that little thing which shows the guys, puffing up with the barrel of the shotgun. The shotgun itself was a sort of an interesting thing, since it's not supposed to be shown. Especially not in that context.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to close this panel now so the next panel can begin. I would like to read a telegram that has arrived this morning. As active duty servicemen, we support your investigation into U.S. war crimes. The American people must be told the truth about our government's brutal destruction of Indochina. We must all remain winter soldiers until this war against humanity is end. Fort Bliss GIs for peace. Thank you.
This morning, the first panel relates to the issue of prisoners of war. Yesterday, we heard some testimony, or quite a bit of testimony, some of it very repetitive, relating to the treatment of prisoners, Vietnamese prisoners, in the hands of Americans. Today we are going to talk about the treatment of Americans at the hands of Vietnamese. It's an emotional issue, and it's one that's certainly causing terrible discussion in this country right now. It seems like the whole war issue has centered around the prisoner of war issue. On the panel this morning, we have more alleged veterans. Some of whom alleged to have been prisoners of war. In an alleged war. Again, I'd like to remind you that this is not a mock trial. We are presenting testimony into an investigation relating to the prisoner of war issue, war crimes in general. My name is Don Duncan. I am a veteran. I served in Vietnam in 1964 and 1965. I was a member of the United States Special Forces. At this point, I will have the rest of the people at the tables introduce themselves in turn to you.
I'm Howard Zinn. I teach political science at Boston University. I'm a veteran of the Air Force in another war. But I'm here today because I went to North Vietnam in early 1968 with Father Daniel Berrigan to bring out the first three American pilots who were released as prisoners by the North Vietnamese.
My name is John Floyd. I was a pilot with the Marine Corps. I served in Vietnam in 1968. I flew missions over both the North and the South. I was discharged December 1969.
My name is John Van Dyke. I'm an attorney. I worked in the State Department on prisoner of war matters in 1966, and I'm now visiting fellow at the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions in Santa Barbara.
I'm George Smith. I was a member of a Special Forces 8 team in South Vietnam in 1963. My camp was overrun, and I was captured by the NLF troops and held prisoner for 2 years and released in November 1965.
I'm Dr. Marjorie Nelson, and I am not a veteran. I was in Vietnam from October 1967 until October 1969. I was captured in the Tet Offensive of 1968 in Hue and spent 2 months with the NLF in the mountains west of Hue. I was in Vietnam working for the American Friends.
My name is Stephanie Caldwell. My brother is a prisoner in North Vietnam. He's been a prisoner since October of 1967.
James Warner. My name is Virginia Warner, and I'm the mother of James Warner, who's been a prisoner in Vietnam, North Vietnam, since 1967 in October. I'm here to ask the American people to help get this thing over with.
I'm John Drolshagen. I was lieutenant as a prisoner of war interrogator. I was in Vietnam from 66 to 67.
My name is Don Zagalonis. I was an interrogator also. I was with the AmeriCal Division in Southern I Corps in Vietnam. I was inducted into the Army in December 1967, and I spent 1969 in Vietnam.
My name is Steve Natzel. I'm from Floral Park, Long Island, New York. I was drafted in 1962 in July. I went to Vietnam in June of 1963 until May of 1964. While in Vietnam, I was attached to the 5th Special Forces Group. I was a member of a psychological warfare civic action team. While in Vietnam, I traveled extensively through the Mekong Delta with our Psywar efforts, and during this time, I witnessed several incidents of mistreatment, maltreatment of prisoners, and that's what I'm here to testify about today. I now work for the Bell System. I'm in management at their headquarters in New York.
Mr. Neitzel, we'll start the testimony with you. Would you please explain specifically where you were in the Delta and elaborate on this mistreatment, some specific instances, please?
Right. Before I start, I would like to point out maybe some of the media people are interested in some kind of proof that I was there, or I am who I say I am, or was where I say I was, whatever. This is my DD-214 form, discharge from the Army. It tells what unit I was in Vietnam when I came back. I have a commendation letter from a Brian Mills, who was the Psywar director for the CIA in the embassy in Vietnam in 64. Attached to the commendation letter is another commendation letter from Colonel Theodore Leonard, who was the commander of U.S. Special Forces at the time. I have several sets of orders sending me on different missions in the Mekong Delta. I have an after-action report, an official copy of the after-action report from our Civil Affairs Augmentation Team Number 4, U.S. Army Special Forces Provisional Vietnam, Detachment B5410, November 63 to April 64. I have about 100 pictures from different places in the Mekong Delta, including many recognizable places to any reporters who may have been in the Mekong Delta, including figures like Henry Cabot Lodge, who visited our camp at the time that I was there, and so on, including pictures may be somewhat incriminating, a forced work detail of Viet Cong prisoners and so on. If that's not enough, I have a copy of a statement that I made to the U.S. Army concerning the things that I had seen. It's been brought out a few times yesterday, I guess, that some people may or may not be willing to make a statement about what they had seen. I'd like to read to you just a paragraph from the affidavit that accompanies this statement. I, Stephen S. Natzel, hereby certify the attached 8 pages to be an exact copy of a statement concerning my personal observations of war crimes committed by United States and South Vietnamese military personnel while I was on active duty with the U.S. Army in South Vietnam. I further certify that the original of this document was forwarded to the U.S. Army 12th Military Police Group, Criminal Investigations, Detachment E, Military Ocean Terminal, Brooklyn, New York, 11250, care of Investigator William H. Bass on September 12th, 1970, for their subsequent investigation. I further certify that since that date, Investigator Bass has acknowledged receipt of the original document and has assured me that an investigation is now in progress. To this affidavit and to each of the 8 pages of the attached statement, I have affixed my signature and solemnly swear to the truth of all statements therein. This is the statement that I will be speaking about today, and these are the incidents that are in this statement. They were transporting some 16 prisoners, South Vietnamese prisoners, who had been interrogated at several levels before being sent to Saigon. They were transporting these prisoners in 2 helicopters, double rotor helicopters, the H-121. There were 8 prisoners brought onto each helicopter. They were tied, hands were tied behind their backs, and they were tethered together with rope around their necks and about a 6-foot length of rope to the next prisoner. A string of 8 of them like that were put on each helicopter. With them were about an equal number of South Vietnamese or ARVN troops as guards. Also on that flight of 5 helicopters were 3 gunships, HU-1B single rotor helicopters. I flew in the first of these helicopters, the Point helicopter. We were to fly support for this mission to bring these prisoners to Saigon. Incidentally, during those days, prisoners were brought to Saigon for a 6-month rehabilitation program, and then they were released after the 6 months to go back to wherever they wanted to go. That is South Vietnamese or NLF prisoners. We took off from Can Tho. We heard, I had a headset on. I heard the radio message to Saigon. We got in contact with MACV headquarters in Saigon, told them we were coming in with 16 prisoners, and they said they would have a greeting party for us at Thon Son Nhut Airport. We flew in 1 direct, non-stop flight. All the ships stayed together the entire flight, about an hour and 10 minutes or so. No helicopter left the group at any time, could never have caught up with us if it did leave and land anywhere. We landed in Saigon, and I got out of the helicopter, and there was a greeting party there to meet us, a colonel from MACV, some other field grade officers. They had a paddy wagon to transport prisoners and so on. When we got off the helicopter, there were exactly 3 prisoners left on 1 helicopter and 1 prisoner left on the other helicopter. These prisoners were now bound with their hands behind their backs. They were blindfolded and, of course, no tether or no rope around their necks attaching to any other prisoners. Instantly realized what had happened and couldn't believe it, although I knew rationally what had to have happened, and I went over to the door gunner of one of the American door gunner of one of the transport ships, and I asked him what the hell happened, and he told me that they had pushed them out over the Mekong Delta, and I said, who? And he said, the ARVN guards did. And I just shook my head and I said, I can't believe it. And he said, go over there and look at the doorway. There are open doorways on these helicopters. They have no closable door. And there's just a door frame. And I went over to the doorway and stopped when I got about 5 feet away. And didn't want to go any closer because there was flesh from the hands of the prisoners when they were pushed out on the door jams and on the door frames. And there was blood on the floor when they had been beaten and pushed out of the helicopters. I went back to my own helicopter that I had just gotten out of, and there I overheard the conversation between the American pilots and the MACV colonel who had come to meet the prisoners, and he asked them what the hell happened to the other prisoners. And one of the American pilots simply said to him, they tried to escape over the Mekong Delta. That was the first or only incident of helicopter murder that I had seen in Vietnam.
Steve, could you, excuse me, could you now relate to treatment of prisoners at a specific A-team camp or in the Delta?
Right. At one particular camp, this was an A-team at a place called Tan Phu, which is in the Kamau Peninsula, deep in the Mekong Delta, the southernmost A-team. And it was in a completely isolated area. It was completely VC-controlled around the A-team camp. In January or February at 1964, I'm not sure exactly which month, I witnessed an almost public, or not almost, a public display of electrical torture of Vietnamese prisoners. What had happened was that...
Excuse me, Steve. When you say public, who was present or who was witness to this specifically?
Well, the way the camp was situated, it had about 4 or 5 foot walls around the compound, maybe even a little higher than that. And there were at least 100 or 150 Arvin strike forces watching from inside the compound. All of the American A-team that was there was watching. And also, there was a little bridge at a canal right next to the camp, a little camelback bridge. And if you stood at the middle of the bridge on the highest part of it, you could see down into the camp. And the torture was done outside at a place in the camp where anyone standing on the bridge could watch it. And it was done for a psychological effect, I suppose, to show off a new invention or a new kind of lie detector that they had conjured up. A captain there, the commander of the A-team, had conjured up a system of electrical torture whereby they took a Sony tape recorder, a plain tape recorder with the VU meters on it, and hooked that up with some battery, field telephone batteries hooked up in series, and a toggle switch was held under the table by a Special Forces sergeant. Then the captain asked questions of a prisoner who was stripped naked, and electrodes from this from these field telephones were attached to the back of his neck, to his armpits, and to his genitals, and his feet. He was told that this apparatus was a lie detector, and that he would be interrogated, and every time he didn't tell the truth, the machine would give him a shock. He didn't know the difference between a lie detector or I'd never seen a tape recorder, I guess. In truth, the captain simply asked questions, and the interpreter asked them in Vietnamese, and when the captain didn't like the answer, he gave some kind of signal to the sergeant, who gave him an electrical charge, and the fellow would jump and scream. Everyone was very impressed of this new lie detector, except I guess the fellow who was being questioned couldn't understand, I guess, how badly or why the lie detector was working so badly. He may or may not have been telling the truth. At any rate, they got information. Whether it was valid or not, I don't know.
In your testimony on your sheet here, you mentioned something about snakes.
Right. At the B team in Canto, this is the headquarters for the 4 Corps, they had an 8-foot python snake, which was kept at the camp in a cage, supposedly for rat control. And when we had prisoners or detainees who were brought to the B team, they were placed, they were immediately questioned, and if they balked at all or sounded like they weren't going to be cooperative, they were simply placed in a room overnight. This was like a detention room, and the door was locked, and the snake was thrown in there with them. Now, the python is a constrictor, so similar to a boa. It's not poisonous. It will snap at you, but it's not poisonous. And it probably can't kill a full-grown American or a large male, but it sure terrified the Vietnamese, and they were in, two of them usually, in a room overnight with the python snake, struggling with it most of the night, I guess, and we could hear them screaming. In fact, on one instance, they had to go in there and gag the prisoners so they wouldn't keep everyone awake all night. In the morning, they were usually more cooperative.
Steve, traveling around through the Delta as you did, just in two words or less, how would you summarize the general treatment of prisoners throughout the A-Team camps in the Delta during that period of time?
Nowhere where I had seen prisoners had I didn't see any humane treatment of prisoners, but I didn't see that many prisoners. But every time I did see them, they were being mistreated in one way or another. If it wasn't electrical torture, it was the snake torture. If it wasn't the snake torture, it was barbed wire cages, which were also used in Tan Phu. This was a coffin-like cage made of barbed wire, about the shape of a coffin, barbed wire strung around stakes. Prisoner was stripped naked and put into this cage for about a 24-hour period. In the daytime, he would bake in the sun there, and in the night, the mosquitoes would eat him all night, I guess, and if the mosquitoes weren't particularly attracted to the Orientals, which they're not, they were sprayed with some kind of a mosquito-attracting liquid, and they'd be full of bites in the morning. And finally, if it wasn't that, at the B team at Canto, again, there was another form of torture, a water torture, whereby prisoners were taken, usually two, in a small canoe out behind the compound in a small rice paddy. They were bound, their hands behind their back. They were blindfolded. They were put on this little canoe. An American Special Forces sergeant was there. Another Vietnamese soldier was there and pulled the boat around in circles in this rice paddy, except that it wasn't a rice paddy anymore. It had been a rice paddy, but now it was used as a latrine, really. That's where the drainage from the B-team latrines went into this rice paddy. It was filled with urine and feces, and it stank to high heaven. And the prisoners were rowed around in that water and were asked questions. And when they balked, the fellow who was poling the boat simply took the pole and knocked them out of the boat into this water, where they spluttered around for a few minutes. It was about 4 feet deep or so, until they found which way was up. They were blindfolded, hands tied behind their backs. And finally they surfaced somehow after drinking half of it, I guess, and were dragged back into the canoe.
Thank you.
That was about the only kind of treatment of prisoners I saw.
Thank you, John. Steve. George Smith, where were you stationed in the Delta with your A-team?
We were at a camp called Hep Wa. It was about 30 miles out of Saigon in the Delta area.
During what period was this?
WBA on the ground.
This was from July 1963 until November 1963 when I was
captured. So we're talking generally about the same time relating to the time that Steve was talking about. This is the same period of time.
Right. We were under the jurisdiction of the B detachment that he was attached to.
The same B detachment he just talked about. Did any of this type of treatment of prisoners occur at your camp?
Our treatment wasn't as sophisticated as that he has described. We just beat them and put them in barbed wire cages that were about 3 or 4 feet high.
Would you... You were captured the 23rd of November, 1963.
That's correct.
Same day that President Kennedy was assassinated, right?
Right.
Would you just briefly describe, you know, the circumstances of how you got captured?
We were at one of those isolated special forces camps where we had a strike force of South Vietnamese that were on our payroll. And about midnight on November 23rd, I was awakened by an explosion and mortar shells were falling on our house. And the camp was very quickly overrun by a large NLF force. And I was captured along with three other Americans.
You were taken captive. What specifically, you know, did they do? What were your feelings? How did they treat you at that specific moment?
During the excitement of battle, of course, they were a little rougher than they were later on, but they didn't mistreat us terribly bad at the time, and I was sure that we were going to be shot because all the stories I had heard at Fort Bragg and after coming into the Vietnam was that they didn't take prisoners, and if they did, they tortured them and eventually killed them, if not immediately.
Were you with the other three prisoners at this time?
I was by myself when I was captured, but I was later taken behind the latrine in the camp where I met Sergeant Camacho, who was one of the mortar operators. And a string was attached to us, sort of like a leash. And I thought we had been taken behind the latrine, of course, to be shot, because they set us down in a cross position, but nothing happened at that time.
Quite apparently, you weren't shot. What did happen?
After they had rounded up all the equipment, ammunition, and weapons in the camp, they took us out over the barbed wire apron surrounding the camp through Madame New's sugarcane field that we were guarding to a small village on the Oriental River.
Well, what were your feelings as you were being led away from this camp at that time?
Well, I thought they were taking us to another place to execute us. And I was worrying about that along with the airstrike that we were under by that time, that the South Vietnamese Air Force was attacking the cane field and burned down a lot of sugar cane. I thought they might accidentally drop something on us. But other than that, there was no immediate fear because the guards seemed to have relaxed after we left the camp. And they were just...
Well, what did happen in this village?
When we arrived at the village, everybody sat down, lit up a cigarette, offered us one, gave us some bananas to eat, and patted us and reassured us that everything was going to be all right, that they had no bad intentions towards us.
And the next step?
And after they took sort of their break after the battle, we crossed the river and went farther into the Delta area where we traveled for about 3 or 4 days. And we finally reached a place where we met up with Rohrbach and McClure, who were also at our camp and had been captured. This is the first we had seen them. After we met these two people, the four of us were taken in those little boats that they have through the canal system down into what is probably the Plain of Reeds, the swamp region. And we stayed on a little island there. They constructed a small shack just big enough for the four of us. They slept out in hammocks in the water. And they allowed McClure's foot wounds to heal so he would be able to travel at a later time.
What kind of medical attention did they provide for McClure?
They provided immediate attention for him when he was captured. He told me that they dressed his wounds the best they could. He had a fragmentation wound of the foot, which was extremely painful for him, it turned out. It was difficult for him to walk. They treated it the best they could.
How about in the swamp?
In the swamp, then they had time to do things, and they got a medic from someplace, and he was quite a good medic. He was well-trained. He had penicillin. He had the instruments to probe the foot and find if there was any foreign objects in it. And soon, McClure's foot did heal quickly enough that we were able to move out in about 10 days, I think.
So quite apparently, what you're saying is that this stopover at the island was specifically for the purpose of taking care of McClure's foot for future movement? Or?
Right. I think it was sort of to allow us time to recover from the initial shock of being captured and from McClure's foot to heal so we could be transported.
Were you ever bothered by American aircraft at this time or anything?
In that area, there were some overflights, but no harassing fire in the swamp. But the day that we met Rohrbach and McClure, that same day that we were under very extremely heavy attack by B-26s, helicopters, and everything that the Air Force had in 63. They strafed us, bombed us, and we happened to be in a village. They evacuated us from the village into a swamp area where we were luckily not bombed by the B-26s.
By this point, you seem to have the feeling you're not going to be tortured or executed, but you have made reference to that. Why specifically did you think you were going to be tortured or executed?
Well, this was what I would call common knowledge among the Special Forces people, that if any of us were captured in South Vietnam, that we'd had it, you know, that they certainly hated us very much, and they would surely do everything to us, at least as much to us as we were doing to them, and that was kind of frightening from the stories that I heard in Vietnam.
Did you ever think about the way you had been treating prisoners before you were taken prisoner yourself? How your camp was treating prisoners?
Oh, certainly. I was sure that I would be subjected to at least that bad of treatment, the beatings and living in the barbed wire cages, and probably much worse than that, because they were reputed to have chopped heads off and tortured prisoners by any means that you could imagine.
So now you left the swamp, and what happens? Where do you go then?
We went on a long march.